I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Radio Times. We all prize loyalty in relationships, whether in families, among friends, at the workplace, in politics. President Trump is testing the loyalty of his Attorney General Jeff Sessions, calling him weak and beleaguered, and saying time will tell if he keeps his job. Sessions called the president's comments kind of hurtful. The president let his new communications director, Anthony Scaramucci, go on an expletive-deleted tirade against Reince Priebus before Priebus was out as White House chief of staff. Priebus told Fox, "I'm Team Trump all the time." Former FBI director James Comey said that Trump asked for his loyalty at their January dinner. When Comey reportedly said, "You'll get my honesty," the president settled for what he called honest loyalty. Last week, the president spoke about loyalty at the Boy Scout Jamboree.
Boy Scout values are American values, and great Boy Scouts become great, great Americans. As the Scout law says, a Scout is trustworthy, loyal. We could use some more loyalty, I will tell you that.
Well, today on Radio Times, we look at all sides of loyalty. We have two guests who have joined us. Dacher Keltner is a professor of psychology at Berkeley, where he also directs the Greater Good Science Center. Wrote a book called The Power Paradox, How We Gain and Lose Influence. He was also an advisor on the film Inside Out. Dacher Keltner, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's great to be with you, Marty.
And Jeff Schessel's with us as well, former speechwriter for President Bill Clinton. He's written two books, one called Supreme Power, Franklin Roosevelt and the Supreme Court, and Mutual Contempt, Lyndon Johnson, Robert Kennedy, and the Feud That Defined a Decade. Jeff Schessel, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
Let me begin with you, Jeff, but I want to make sure, Dacher, that you weigh in on this as well. And I do want to talk, at least in the beginning of the show, about the president, and then we'll go on from there. Looking at his relationship, such as it is with Jeff Sessions, how do you see, Jeff Schessel, how the president views, even defines, what loyalty is?
I think President Trump has a very instrumentalist view of loyalty. And by that I mean loyalty is not really so much about a relationship, about a connection, about a shared set of goals. Loyalty is fealty. Loyalty is obedience. Loyalty is something that others owe to him, and whether he returns that loyalty is really up to him in the moment. And I think that's one of the reasons that he's struggling right now, is that he has not so much inspired loyalty as he has demanded it.
Is that unusual in a president?
It is unusual in a president. You usually don't get to be president unless you've demonstrated some real skill over the course of a reasonably long career in inspiring people, aligning them with you, rallying them to your cause, to your candidacy, to your set of goals, to your ideological program. Presidents are people who have succeeded in attracting people to them along the way. But this is a different model presidency. It was a different model candidacy, and he did not win because there was a sort of a Trump movement. He did not win because he had been bringing people along the way with him over the years. There have been people who have been loyal to Trump within the Trump organization, within his company over the years, but the way in which he has won their loyalty, or at least commanded their loyalty, is very different than the way it works in politics. He has won people to his he has brought people along by paying them very well, by instilling fear in them, by promoting them in some cases above what others would seem to be their station, and giving them power they never would have had if not for him. You can't really replicate that writ very large across federal government, or even within a West Wing, which is a pretty small space. And so I think he has found that the tools don't necessarily apply. And I think he doesn't understand. I think he is showing really week after week that he doesn't understand what it takes to command loyalty in a political environment.
Well, Dacher Keltner, let me get you in on the conversation. You have looked at loyalty in its various forms and guises. How do you see it coming out of the White House?
Yeah, it very much dovetails with what Jeff just said. I mean, in psychological science, we're interested in a couple of models of influence and keeping people loyal to you and being inspired by you. One is rooted in Machiavellianism and manipulation and even psychopathy, where you are cool to the interests of others and show a certain degree of cruelty. And there's a long tradition in thinking that Machiavellianism and narcissism can gain you power, and it does work in select contexts. And the other model is kind of what it traces back to Aristotle, the philosopher, and it's this long-standing tradition of thinking about virtue and respect and dignity and even gratitude and compassion as being, and empathy as foundations of gaining the loyalty of others. And a lot of studies are showing that you need, as Jeff was saying, you need this kind of human connection, you need relatedness, you need to convey that you're willing to sacrifice for others, that you treat them with dignity, to really inspire loyalty. And I mean, Trump is straight out of the Machiavellian playbook of manipulation, deception, and coercion and threat. Our studies show in politics and finance don't work that well.
Well, Machiavelli said many things, and some I think are attributed to him correctly and some are not. But, Doctor, yeah. He did say, I believe he said, it's much safer to be feared than loved. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Machiavelli is this great philosopher out of Florence in the 16th century and had this idea of you gain and keep power by threat and dominance and instilling fear, as you said. And clearly, we see a lot of that today, and I think Jeff's rightly questioned whether that works in the long haul of West Wing politics and elsewhere.
Jeff, you have written about President Johnson, and I'll just quote something he said. I can't do the whole quote, but I will do some of it. He says, "I don't want loyalty. I want loyalty. I want him to kiss my ass in Macy's window at high noon and tell me it smells like roses," and he goes on from there. I mean, it seems to me that's an example of the kind of loyalty that both you and Ducker are talking about.
Yes, that's loyalty as subjugation. That's loyalty, unquestioning loyalty, whether I'm right or wrong, whatever it is that I ask you to do, I want you to do it, and I want you to like it. Tell me that you don't like it.
Did it work with Johnson, though?
No, it didn't work particularly well with Johnson. And Johnson is a curious case in that Johnson did actually inspire a lot of loyalty. He had a lot of loyal lieutenants who came up from Texas with him and stuck by him through the toughest times, because Johnson was in many ways an inspiring individual. Johnson was an absolutely commanding presence. He absolutely used fear, but he also used flattery. He used charm. He was more impassioned about the issues than even anyone around him. He swept people up in what it was that he was trying to do and in the belief that he could make it happen, and very often he did. He did what seemed to be politically impossible. But there were many others in Democratic politics and even within his own administration, folks that he had inherited from the Kennedy administration after the assassination of JFK, who didn't like Johnson personally, who didn't believe that he was sincere in the positions that he was taking, and never were willing to give him that full measure of devotion. And so he demanded it, he insisted on it, he bullied people into it, he pushed people out if he didn't trust them. And it's really never an effective formula, I think, in our political system. And it's particularly ineffective when those around you don't actually fear you. And I think that's what we're seeing develop right now, that President Trump wants to instill fear in the people around him in the West Wing, in the people across the federal government, in the Congress. He bullies senators such as Senator Murkowski by tweeting derogatory comments, by ordering them to get in line, and they don't. And I think that with every passing month, with every passing controversy, I think senators are coming to see that there's not really a price for defying President Trump. And if he can't rule by fear, then he's going to have to find another model. And we've never seen him demonstrate that ability.
Well, Tucker, let me ask you about loyalty from the other end. And I quoted both Sessions, but also Reince Priebus and others who have at least publicly or verbally remained loyal to the president. How do you understand that aspect, that part of loyalty?
Well, you know, one thing we do know from the study of political identity and politics is that people are fairly loyal to their political party. And so obviously I think these sort of external statements of loyalty to the irrationality of Trump are statements of a commitment to a party that are, you know, just part of the job for Reince Priebus and others.
Is it something tribal about loyalty?
Very much so. I mean, and I think that, you know, the moral psychologists have really started to look at politics as not only tribal, but sort of based in core passions. The Republican Party orients around certain moral principles, and they're going to be committed to those, notwithstanding Trump's behavior.
But has something changed where in the olden days of the 1960s, you could demand a kind of loyalty, and that just doesn't work today with human beings, Docker?
Yeah, that's been one of the really striking findings in this historical study of what leaders, you know, what we expect of leaders, what behavior we expect of them, is there has been this move away from subjugation tactics that Jeff nicely referred to kind of more respect, empathy-oriented social tendencies of does the person listen well? Do they treat other people with respect? Do they express gratitude or appreciation? So we now expect that of our leaders to a much greater extent than we did 60, 70 years ago. And I think that those expectations are being violated right now.
Do you see that in Washington, Jeff?
I do see that. I mean, the parties are in many ways weaker than they have ever been. There's a tribalism that you've described that is one of the maybe the most powerful force in our politics today. But at the same time, the instruments of that tribalism, the parties themselves, seem passive. They seem borne along by these currents that they can't control. I think there's a sense of helplessness right now in both parties. I spoke to someone recently who had been at the Republican National Committee with Reince Priebus when he was there, when he was leading the RNC, and seemed to be quite an effective leader. And what this individual told me is that Priebus essentially, his feeling about Trump had been that the party chose him, and we simply must do whatever it is that the party, meaning the primary voters, and tell us to do, that there was no overarching vision of really what the Republican Party was or should be and where it's going. And so I think this, again, points to or underscores one of the problems for President Trump right now is that there was no Trump program. He was and remains a sort of unpredictable, non-ideological figure. Sometimes that's a strength in politics mm-hmm. because it gives you a kind of flexibility. But there's a flip side to it. There's a cost to it. And that is that there's not particularly any allegiance out there to a Trump program because nobody can tell you, including Trump himself, what it is. Trump is not seen by members of the Republican Party as the head of the Republican Party. So there isn't a party allegiance to Trump. And so,
you know what, Jeff?
Things.
Hold on, only because we're just seconds away from our break. We are talking about loyalty in this hour of Radio Times with Jeff Schessel and Docker Keltner. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about loyalty in this hour of the show. How do you define loyalty? What does it mean to you? That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation. Talking with Jeff Schessel. He's a former speechwriter for President Bill Clinton, wrote a couple of books, one about the Supreme Court, one about the relationship between Lyndon Johnson and Robert Kennedy. Dr. Keltner is a professor of psychology at Berkeley. He directs the Greater Good Science Center, and he wrote a book called The Power Paradox. Let me play a clip from NBC's The Office, and this is Dwight Schrute on the value, the cost, the price of loyalty.
Would I ever leave this company? Look, I'm all about loyalty. In fact, I feel like part of what I'm getting paid for here is my loyalty. But if there were somewhere else that valued that loyalty more highly, I'm going wherever they value loyalty the most.
Loyalty goes several different directions. You never go wrong with a clip from The Office. I'll just put it that way. Darker, let me ask you just a couple of questions about the workplace. Obviously, Dwight Schrute talking about The Office there. About loyalty in the workplace, knowing, of course, you know, the boss can hire and fire you. They can promote and demote you. How do we factor loyalty into that environment?
Well, and The Office is the great source of all scientific insight.
Absolutely, no question about it.
Out in the organizational world, loyalty and commitment are really fundamental and massively important. And what studies show is that when workers are more loyal and committed, they work harder, they work more productively, they're more innovative, they have fewer sick days, right, which cost American businesses billions of dollars. And that begs the question of, you know, that we've been entertaining here, which is like, well, then how does a leader or a manager comport her or himself to inspire trust and to inspire loyalty? And there are these really incredible studies that are very relevant to our conversation that show that, you know, that as we rise in power, and I write about this in The Power Paradox, and we lose sight of what got us there in the first place, we start acting in disrespectful, undignified, impulsive, psychopathic ways, as if our brain's been damaged. And we swear at people, and we threaten people, and we tweet at 3 a.m, and we do all these things. And what happens, it's almost as if people have a loyalty barometer in them, where they're saying, wow, I'm not committed to this work. Mm-hmm. And what you find is, in that kind of climate in the workplace, where leaders are acting in problematic ways, our managers are, people disengage and they move on, like our character Dwight.
Or maybe they leak or become whistleblowers too, right?
Yeah, so there is this really important interpersonal relational dimension of, you know, face-to-face, am I treated with respect? Does the person listen carefully? Do they not interrupt me? Do they, you know, they value what I have to say? Those things matter enormously in the day-to-day fluctuations of loyalty for the quality of the work we do.
Well, Jeff, I'd be curious if you want to weigh in on that at all. And apparently this is an extremely leaky White House. I'm not sure exactly what to make of it. I wonder how it compares to other White Houses.
Well, I think it's more extreme in that regard than any White House in modern memory. I mean, every White House leaks. Some leak strategically, some leak in a mercenary fashion. There is always a phenomenon. There are always going to be some White House staffers leaking to gain advantage over other White House staffers. This is one of the ways in which power struggles play themselves out, is through reporters and news outlets as intermediaries. It was the case in the Reagan White House, and from time to time it was certainly the case in the Clinton White House as well, particularly early on. But there is a relentlessness and a viciousness to the leaking that is happening right now. And as we saw with Anthony Scaramucci last week, from time to time these White House staffers will just say it outright and on the record. So there's something else that's happening here, a lot of it really ultimately has to be attributed to the president himself, what he's willing to tolerate, what he is willing to reward. We read in Axios that the president himself was actually pretty pleased with Scaramucci's rant to the New Yorker, his profane rant to the New Yorker, that he wanted to see more of that kind of thing. And the last straw, according to one report, was for Priebus, was that he didn't fight back in similar fashion. So, you know, if this is the culture that President Trump creates, if this is the climate that he creates, then it's a free for all, and that's what we're seeing.
I read some quotes from businessman Donald Trump, who described himself, these are his words, as a loyalty freak. I mean, something that he just values above almost anything else. Docker, what do you make of that?
Excuse me. There's no doubt that's true. I mean, it's central. And what I worry about as a psychologist is the kind of the far removed effects of this kind of free for all that Jeff referred to, and the kind of behavior that we see with Scaramucci. And suddenly you've seen students, you know, who see a model of leadership in the White House, and they're in class swearing at students are of different ethnicities. You see a rise in different kinds of hate crime. You see a disengagement to the loyalty to the laws of our society, which I worry about. So I think that this model of loyalty, if that's what you're going to call it,
right,
has these consequences out in the public sphere that we are seeing in full force today.
Tucker, let me read an email from Jane who says, if you have to ask someone for loyalty or to pledge an oath of loyalty, are they really loyal? Are they?
Yeah, I think that's I think that when you study the micropolitics of how people lead great teams, they're not asking explicitly. They're doing the hard work of conveying respect and getting other people's opinions to bear on anything that's being considered and to treat people with dignity and listen well. That is the foundation of real inspiring loyalty. And when you're asking explicitly or tweeting about it, I suspect the case may be too late.
I think Docker's exactly right about that, and I think relatively recent history bears that out. If you look at the presidents who have been most obsessed with loyalty, the presidents who are most likely to be demanding loyalty from the White House staff or from other members of their administration, it's the presidents who have most struggled with loyalty, who have been least likely actually to win it in a kind of honest way, in a natural way. And that, I think the primary examples of that are Lyndon Johnson, who we discussed before, and Richard Nixon.
How did Nixon view loyalty?
Nixon was a lot like Trump in that he distrusted most of the people around him. He demanded complete loyalty and was never sure that he was getting it. And that often becomes, in a presidency, a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you distrust the people around you, they hear that, they see that. Sometimes they will strain themselves to show loyalty in unhealthy ways, often by mirroring the prejudices and bad habits of the commander-in-chief. And others will simply feel that they've not been valued, that they're not being recognized, and they will undercut the president or simply leave.
That is Jeff Schessel. He's a former speechwriter for President Bill Clinton. He's written a couple of books. Also with us, Dr. Keltner, who's a professor of psychology at Berkeley, where he directs the Greater Good Science Center. We are talking about loyalty in this hour of Radio Times, loyalty in politics, in relationships, at work, in families. And again, you can join our conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Troy from Downingtown to join our conversation. Troy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, I can understand loyalty in the West Wing when you're being given, power or whatever. But what about the Trump supporters? Where are they coming from, where we're getting like 80% or 85% saying they, support Trump?
It's a good question, Troy. Let me put that first to Docker. How do you see, and we talked about the kind of tribalism of parties. You could probably put that with sports teams as well. But how do you see that kind of loyalty?
Yeah, I think it's one of the really deep questions about this political era. And we actually have a little bit of empirical data that bear on this or help us think about this. And, what we find is, and we study, the sort of social behavior of politicians and organizational leaders and hedge fund managers and the like, and we find you will remain loyal to somebody not only out of tribalism, but if they show, in their nonverbal comportment a sense of courage, like they're willing to stand up to things and justice. They are really interested in fairness. And I think those, that 35-40% of the U.S. that is a faithful Trump supporter see him as courageous, that he's fighting the political system and that has in his America First language, some might call it jingoism, it has a sense of justice rooted in it. And so that is where he can be praised, as he has this way of conveying the courage and justice to his supporters where they feel like he's got their back.
How do you see it, Jeff?
Well, I see it similarly. The fact that President Trump is so embattled right now is a measure of the fact, I think, in the eyes of his supporters, that he's taking on forces that they don't particularly like. He's standing up to or fighting with institutions that they actually quite despise, from the news media to the Congress, even to the Republican Party. The extent to which President Trump is getting pushback from these institutions can be seen as a sign that he's fighting the right fights and encountering the resistance that one would expect.
Let me quote something from the Washington Post from today. It's titled The Daily 202, Trump's Warped View of Loyalty and the Conceit of the October 8th Coalition. Quoting here, Trump's diehard supporters see themselves as members of what counselor to the president Kellyanne Conway has called the October 8th Coalition. These are the people who steadfastly stood by Trump last fall on the day that the Washington Post published a videotape of him crudely boasting about being able to get away with groping women because he's a celebrity. Does that make sense to you, Docker?
It does, and one of the kind of alarming trends right now that you see in this political climate is, these Trump loyalists, as Jeff said, they have an absolute cynicism about our foundational institutions, from the media to, politics to Wall Street regulation, public education, healthcare, and so almost anything that comes out of those sources is not going to be viewed as trustworthy and worthy of battling. So it's a problematic state of affairs.
Here's an email from Joseph. Ask your guest to comment about Trump requiring his employees to sign non-disclosure statements. How does that figure into our conversation, Jeff?
Well, again, it's a measure of his distrust of the people around him, and his obsession with leaks coming out of the White House is another sign of it as well. And the notion that the first order of business for the incoming chief of staff, Mr. Kelly, who arrives today, is to crack down on leaks is, I think, the wrong diagnosis of the problem. The question really is, why are they leaking? And what are they leaking? They're leaking evidence of absolute disorder. And they're leaking because they're not aligned behind the president or with one another. And so the leaks are really only a manifestation of a much deeper problem. And until the president himself begins to address that, if he is in fact capable of that, then I don't think you're going to see a significant change in behavior. So they can sign anything they want. They can swear any oaths of allegiance to the new chief of staff or to the president himself. But the president has got to create a climate in which people are willing to link arms in pursuit of a common goal. And the common goal can't be being the last man standing.
Let me get Jeff from Trenton, New Jersey, to join our conversation. Jeff, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you for the discussion.
Sure.
The points about loyalty made me think of another president who was loyalty went in the other direction. George W. Bush famously was reluctant to get rid of Donald Rumsfeld out of loyalty to him. And I felt at the time that that was noble in one way, but also short-sighted in another, and that it failed to account for the proper loyalty one ought to have towards our country, towards our institutions, towards our troops, and so on. And so I wonder if appealing to higher loyalties is one possible answer here, which in turn makes me think that it really points to the utter narcissism and the ethical and programmatic emptiness of the president, because for him there is no higher loyalty than himself, and there is no program or ethic that is higher than himself. But perhaps for his voters or for others in our society, is there a chance to tap into something that is a greater obligation of loyalty? And I'll take my answer off the air.
And Jeff, just a quick question. Are you talking about country constitution, things like that? Loyalty to that?
Yes, country constitution, institutions, values, all the things one ought to be more loyal to than a person.
What do you think, Docker?
Yeah, it's and I think Jeff referred to this earlier, that there's no sense of the cause to the Trump administration. There's no sense of an ideology. And for You know, when psychologists study the great presidencies, one of the clear things that great presidents do, even when you disagree with them ideologically, is they have a very clear statement of a core value or an ideology, like freedom for Ronald Reagan. And that becomes this higher loyalty. And frankly, Trump and his administration, if they are hewing to this instrumentalist Machiavellian approach, the sole principle there is the maintaining of the person's own power, Trump's own power and wealth, and that just is not inspiring.
What about making America great again, Jeff?
Well, it's a very wide open concept, and and like freedom, one has to articulate what it means. And President Reagan did a reasonably effective job in that, although there was a lot of debate within his own West Wing as to what advancing freedom actually required of the United States. And but these big amorphous concepts need to be clarified, and he has not been at all effective in doing that. It remains just as vague today as it was during the campaign.
But we're almost up in a break here, but I'm thinking about loyalty to the Constitution, for instance. Is that too vague, Jeff?
Well, it shouldn't be. I mean, there can be dispute about what the Constitution suggests in one regard or another, but there should be no question that the president's ultimate obligation is to the rule of law and to the Constitution. And I think one of the most worrying statements that has come out of President Trump since he took office was his declaration that Attorney General Sessions, by recusing himself from the Russia matter, was being unfair to the president, was being disloyal to the president. What he was, in fact, being loyal to in that moment, maybe a little bit under duress, was to the rule of law, which is a higher obligation than an obligation to any president.
We are talking about loyalty on Radio Times today, and you can join our conversation calling us at 1-888-477-9499. That's Stand By Your Man, Tammy Wynette. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with Dr. Keltner, a psychology professor at Berkeley. Also with us, Jeff Schessel. He was a speechwriter for President Bill Clinton, and we are talking about loyalty, I guess healthy, unhealthy loyalty, what it has to do with power, with gratitude, sacrifice, empathy, subservience. And again, you can join our conversation at 1-888-477-9499. Comments coming in, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Doctor, let me go back to you. And in certain ways, there is a kind of a family business in the White House, but that's Robert Kennedy, you know, worked for his brother. It's not the first time something like that has happened. But talk to us a bit about how loyalty figures in when it involves family.
Yeah, I mean, that's where psychologists have been really deeply interested in this, which is, you know, when are you loyal to a romantic partner in spite of all the difficulties of staying loyal in that context? When are you loyal to your parents? And there, I think that, you know, I think there are a couple of forces at play. One is do they show the signs of commitment to the family and to the greater good of the family, and we will remain loyal to our partners and siblings and fathers and mothers when they show those signs. And I think that's in play in the White House. And then the second is when you mix in, you know, economic issues and family business issues, and there, you know, the anecdotal observation suggests when you have family businesses, you very often create these hierarchical models of really following the patriarch or the older generation. So that's worrisome because it countervails open discussion and alternatives, mm-hmm. and leads to really closed models of influence.
Jeff, you've written about Robert Kennedy, his relationship obviously with his brother, but also with LBJ after John Kennedy was assassinated. How do you see then family relationships involving and perhaps implicating loyalty or even disloyalty in the White House?
Well, I think that family relationships in the White House are inherently problematic, and certainly John Kennedy took some risks in appointing Bobby as Attorney General, and the fact that Robert Kennedy turned out to be really, I think by most accounts, one of the great attorneys general in American history should not suggest that this is not an issue or not a concern. But Robert Kennedy is an interesting case, and I think it tells us something more fundamental about loyalty and how John Kennedy saw it and what we can learn from that. Robert Kennedy was, without question, absolutely loyal to his brother.
Right.
But he was also someone who would sit across the table from President Kennedy, whether it was just the two of them in the Oval Office together or in a cabinet meeting with lots of other people present, and tell it to him straight. And one of the reasons that JFK valued Robert Kennedy so much was because he could count on a straight answer from Robert Kennedy. And he knew that Bobby would never sugarcoat it, he would never be pursuing his own agenda, but he would go out there and try to get the right answer to whatever difficult question they were grappling with. And this really is, I think, again, a higher order of loyalty. John Kennedy certainly, as president, expected that when he made a decision that the men around him, and they were all men, would execute that decision. But he gathered a group of people around him in the cabinet and in the West Wing who, for the most part, would tell it to him straight. Hmm. He felt that being honest, being candid, and even questioning the president's own views, well, these were acts of loyalty. And that to simply say yes, to simply nod one's head and tell the president whatever you imagine he wants to hear is not the kind of loyalty that Kennedy was looking for.
So, Doctor, honest loyalty, is that what we all should be going for?
Yeah, I think this is, you know, we're really differentiating a higher order loyalty to, you know, the service to the greater good or some core value or principle that the party represents versus this more coercive, subjugating loyalty that Trump seems to be embodying. And there are these new studies coming out of laboratory studies showing that when leaders demand this kind of loyalty, they subjugate, they threaten, they coerce, the people around them just become these, they just nod their head, say yes, and they make really bad decisions, right? They feel stressed out and they feel constrained in their thinking. I think Bobby Kennedy, as Jeff nicely described, was really committed to a different kind of loyalty, the effective functioning of that administration. And we need to worry about what kind of loyalty is being demanded.
I'm curious, just briefly, if you don't mind, Jeff, and then we'll get back to our callers and our commenters here as well. Did Robert Kennedy give his honest loyalty to LBJ? And how did LBJ feel about it?
Well, LBJ somewhat diplomatically asked Robert Kennedy for his loyalty immediately after the assassination. He said to him, and this was the truth, "I need you more than President Kennedy needed you." In many ways, that was in fact true, because Johnson understood that he would never be seen to be fulfilling the Kennedy program unless Robert Kennedy went along with it. So he needed him very badly. But Robert Kennedy, there were years of distrust that preceded that moment. He didn't believe that Johnson was really committed to JFK's vision for America. He didn't believe that Johnson would actually fulfill it. Now, this turned out to be wrong in many respects, but Robert Kennedy simply couldn't give that kind of loyalty to Johnson and began very quickly looking for an exit from the administration.
Let me get Jerry from Chester to join our conversation. Hi, Jerry. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
My name is Jerry Cole. I'm calling from Chester. I want to commend the gentleman in the studio for the exciting and intellectual discussion.
Thanks, Jerry.
My input when it comes to loyalty is that loyalty, as far as the family and relationship standpoint, is somewhat an inborn tendency. People tend to be loyal to their partner and stuff like that. My only thing here is when a leader demands loyalty so excessively, like, you know, like Donald Trump, I feel there is something cynical or something of insecure, like insecurity and stuff like that from that leader. And being blindly loyal, I think it's not a good thing. The gentleman in the studio touched on that. I think it's very important to be honest and straightforward with your leader instead of being blindly loyal and telling him things that are not true, things that are not right.
Well, Jerry, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I think you underscored what we said. But he also raised something which I want to put to you, Docker. Are there some people, just by the nature of their personality or their temperament, who just are more loyal than others?
Yeah, you know, there are all these really well-known studies in social psychology where people, the Milgram study, where people are told by an experimenter to give shocks to another person, even though it may be harmful, and other studies like that. And you do find, and it's unnerving, that 30 to 40% of people will do almost anything a leader will say. And so psychologists have been interested in what's the personality profile of that person. They tend to be dutiful and like to follow rules and like to fold into stricter hierarchies. And I think Jerry really nicely made the reference to blind loyalty.
Right.
And that is not good for the complexities of politics, where you need negotiations and complex discussion.
And this, I would add, is the profile that we see in the so-called October 8th coalition that you described before. The fact that the president's advisor, Kellyanne Conway, would actually award this group with that name like it's an honorific, the October 8th coalition, that they were willing to stand by this man even when he was recorded on tape bragging about sexually assaulting multiple women. This is the, I'll walk over broken glass, I'll walk through fire, I'll do anything for this man. And it brings to mind a comment that Trump himself made during the campaign when he bragged that he could go out and, shoot somebody in the middle of the street and these voters would stand by him. And that's what he's looking for, and that may be what he's got from a few of these folks in the West Wing, Kellyanne Conway among them.
Docker, you had talked about, and I'm looking actually at something you wrote in the Harvard Business Review last October about, and I'll quote here, while people usually gain power through traits and actions that advance the interests of others, such as empathy, collaboration, openness, fairness, and sharing, when they start to feel powerful or enjoy a position of privilege, those qualities begin to fade, something you referenced earlier. How does someone in a position of power then mitigate against those feelings and those actions? How do you fight your own, your own impulse to abuse power and privilege?
Yeah, I think that we're seeing, the Scaramucci rant is a classic example of this problem, which is that when people feel, that they deserve the blind loyalty of the people around them without criticism or straight honesty, when they feel powerful, when they come from deep places of unchecked privilege, like the Trump family, what we show in our lab studies is, people act like psychopaths. They lie, they cheat, they swear, they take resources for themselves at the expense of others. They drive like, they blaze through dangerous pedestrian zones. So it is a problematic pattern of behavior. And how do they mitigate it? It even gets worse. The story gets worse, which is that they develop these ideologies of leadership of, they demand loyalty. They think that they are superior to common people. They feel they're above the law. They feel like the law is irrelevant when it comes to the conduct of power. And I think we are seeing a lot of evidence of that dynamic that I called the power paradox, that they lose sight of serving the people that got them to power in the first place.
But does that happen to everybody? Everybody in a position of power gets kind of drunk with that power?
It's a pretty regular tendency that we will be a little bit less attentive to other people, a little bit less thoughtful and sophisticated in our reasoning and compassionate when feeling powerful. But there are certain people who actually become better for others. So if the Dalai Lama was the president, it might be a different government. So
imagine it would. Let me get James from, looks like Westmount area, to join us in Radio Times. Hi, James. Go ahead. You're on the air.
My question is that you have two presidencies that were close. We just had Barack Obama leave. And when I'm hearing loyalty, I'm trying to figure out how was it that for something that was hard to get done before he became president, which was passing this ACA, to me it had nothing to do with whether he had enough people in Washington, D.C., which is very rare to have loyalty. It was just politics got it done. So with this president, you know, he's looking for something that, I mean, if you want loyalty,
get a dog, right?
and get a dog, right?
Yeah.
Get a dog. Whereas he had, to me, more collateral, more political collateral than Barack Obama, and he didn't get it done.
Well, James, you raise
where is loyalty and understanding politics? Where's that line that makes the difference?
It's an interesting question. Jeff, do you want to take that?
Well, I think that President Obama is an interesting counterexample in many ways. While he certainly didn't get everything done that he tried to do, he got some very, very big things done, including, of course, the ACA, as you mentioned. And how did he get it done? We could probably talk for a good hour or more about that. But I think where loyalty comes into the picture is in a couple of ways. One, I think that there was a shared sense of commitment to one another among that staff. The reason he was called No Drama Obama was not just because he himself was not a dramatic personality, but because that culture that he created around him was mirrored and echoed by the White House staff. It was a remarkably undramatic White House staff by historical standards, and that, I think, is part of their effectiveness. But most significantly, he set big goals. He described them. He painted a vision that ultimately he was able to bring the country and a slight majority of the Congress around to. And so there was a loyalty that transcended Barack Obama as an individual, and it was a loyalty to a larger vision of what mm-hmm. kind of country we are. And whether they liked Obama, and I'm speaking now of members of Congress,
sure.
whether they sort of bought into Barack Obama as a political phenomenon or not, they believed in the kind of America that he was describing, and they pursued those goals in the manner that he set out.
Doctor, we're almost out of time here, but just looking ahead into your crystal ball out there, how are you going to watch, I guess, especially with a new White House chief of staff, I believe that's his title, Kelly, what are you going to look for if we're looking at loyalty?
Well, you know, as a psychologist, who studies social groups and leaders within social groups, we look for several things that we've talked about thus far. You know, leaks are much like the gossip that really can undermine a leader of a small group outside of politics, right? So I'll be looking for the character of those leaks. I'll be looking for the strength of the social network of Republicans, and is there sort of a sense of commitment and being inspired through Kelly and the new West Wing that he creates that we haven't seen thus far. So I'm going to be looking for kind of these telltale signs of loyalty in how they act. So we will see.
Well, a perfect way to end the show. Dr. Keltner, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
A lot of fun for us as well. Jeff Schessel, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. Adam Staniszewski, our engineer today. The show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. And we close things out with Loyalty by Kendrick Lamar featuring Rihanna from his 2017 album.
All I want is loyalty, loyalty, loyalty. Loyalty, loyalty, loyalty. Loyalty. 10-4, no switching sides, feel something wrong. You acting shifty, you don't vibe with me no more. I need loyalty, loyalty, loyalty.